Welcome to Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny, and I'm in the studio today with vinyl record aficionado, I think that'd be fair to say, David Bruce.
Hello, Louis. How are you?
Good. How about yourself?
Great. Thanks.
And along those lines, you've got a stack of some vinyl records that we'll probably take a look at as we chat.
I did bring some good vinyl in.
It's really fair to call you a vinyl record aficionado. I mean, certainly a huge fan, and in some ways an expert, I think, compared to some people, right?
Compared to some people.
Yeah.
That's as far as I would go.
Okay. Very humble of you, actually. But no, I've always, in the years that you had the record store Compact Discovery, I never had a lot of time to get in there because I was always running in and out of Cookeville over the years. Now that I'm settled in here, I lament the fact that the store is no more. But I think that we're just seeing a change altogether in music formats. You and I had talked briefly before you coming in about the fact that cassettes now have a resurgence in sales, and nobody would have anticipated that, not even you, right? I know I did not.
Well, we never stocked used cassettes because once you get into a used cassette, you never know what you're going to get into. It may be broken, halfway through.
Right. And you can't test all those. A lot of people, when you come into a used vinyl store, a used CD store, they want to know if you've tested it and whether they're playable or not. So,
but the vinyl, you can look at it for scratches,
right.
And the CD's the same thing.
Yeah. And some people prefer an old scratchy vinyl record. I've gotten reissues or new versions of a lot of albums that I had once upon a time, but more than a handful of those can't be found at all. I have certain vinyl record albums that I've looked on eBay again and again, been in stores, they're not in existence.
Yeah.
And so the scratchy version is still kind of fun to listen to because the scratches are the exact same place you remember them.
I've never been a fan of scratches. I go for the cleanest possible version
I can find.
Yeah.
I never thought to ask you this. You have a vinyl record collection at home?
I do. Probably about 1,000, I would say.
1,000, wow. What's your favorite genre of music, if you could even say that?
I think I'm like you. I'm a jazz man.
That's interesting. Now, I have a large jazz collection of what I'm going to be selling at a store that I'm opening soon, and we'll talk about that maybe on another show, but I'm ultimately a fan of rock and roll and R&B and soul.
Yeah.
And you may or may not know this, but I only read British news sources on music. I read Uncut and I read Mojo, and I dropped Rolling Stone years ago, though I have all Rolling Stone in bound form from the first issue to 1977. That's always a good reference point, but I didn't know you were a jazz fan as well.
Yeah, I love jazz.
That's great.
Mostly the old stuff, like Thelonious Monk. I know you like him.
Yeah.
Coltrane,
yes.
Miles Davis.
Yeah.
Charles Mingus.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the greats.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how many? Do you have one, two turntables at home? Or?
I have two.
Two.
I have another one packed up I'm not using, but.
Gotcha.
To two in use.
Yeah, and you probably keep a good high-end turntable. What is your brand turntable that you have at home?
I have a Technics, and I also have a TIAC.
Okay. I've had Technics 1200 MKs, and for listeners that don't know, that was kind of like the standard turntable for a lot of DJs for years. And I kept mine for as many years as I could until they stopped making parts for them anymore. And that goes back about 15 years ago. Gave up on them finally, and then wound up having to buy new ones now that vinyl's selling at a pretty swift pace. So,
my Technics is not as nice as that one you just mentioned.
But Technics, for the most part, was the go-to brand.
They are,
once upon a time, yeah. And so you have, do you have a mixing board by any chance, or you just go turntable to turntable?
No.
Gotcha, okay.
No, actually, they're in separate rooms.
Oh, I see, okay, yeah nice. Yeah, I think that for a lot of listeners that don't know, vinyl record sales have increased by about 100% per year for like the last 3 years. And apparently, I think it's 2 years in a row that they've outsold CD and digital music sales.
I think I've read that.
It's kind of astounding.
Yes.
There's this whole resurgence among pre-millennials, and I forget what that age group now is called. There's sort of a category name that eludes me. But pre-teens and kids in the early teenage years are discovering this like it's a new music format. And parents, if they're smart, won't call their kid out and say, that's been around forever. Don't be cynical. Just join them enthusiastically in their search for vinyl record albums. And many kids that age are describing to the parents what is now a communal experience. We get together. We all sit in a group together. And they're sort of reacting against the millennials, if you will, who maybe were spending a lot of time on their technology gadgets, staring down at them. And that's not a complete summary of millennials. That's unfortunately just a sort of cliche that's true among many of them. But But for listeners that don't know, we should tell them about what an LP is, what an EP is, the speeds, that kind of thing, for people that might be getting into vinyl for the first time.
I think you're right about the young people. They didn't grow up with albums like we did, and they call them vinyl now instead of albums or LPs, which meant long playing record. What is popular about albums that they didn't grow up with is the artwork.
The artwork, yeah.
I mean, it's just like this Jethro Tull, thick as a brick.
Amazing.
It opens up, and there's an actual newspaper in there.
I didn't remember that about that album. Yeah, I mean, the exterior has that look of a, we're looking at a Jethro Tull album that looks like the cover of a, and it literally has a
literally
newspaper.
Has a
the
newspaper.
Cover looked like a newspaper, and then you open it up. That's amazing, and that's what a lot of these younger kids are reacting to, the fact that they can, you know, view the artwork, read the lyrics, pass the album, the actual cover around amongst themselves, and then they talk about the experience of getting up and turning it over and listening to the second side, like that's a novelty.
I think when you're actually putting that much work into listening to something, you listen to it closer.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's a very good point. I never thought about looking
at it. And I wanted to bring this up. If you run across a used record in a store and it says, has something on there that says demonstration, not for sale, that means it's a first pressing. It was sent to radio stations.
Yeah.
And that's always, a first pressing is going to sound better than a second or third or tenth pressing.
That's a good point that people should know. Very often they look at something like that has a sticker on the front and thinks, oh, it's in worse shape or something, or there's something subgrade about it. It's not. They're actually getting their hands on something of more value.
Yes, Fragile, that's just another great album cover. You're not going to see if you listen to it digitally.
That is a beautiful album.
Roger Dean was the artist.
Yeah, what gets forgotten, I think, in digital music is who are the artists, for the actual artists that were involved in it other than the musicians. And the people that created album photographs and covers and artwork were just astounding at what they did.
Jeff Beck, Blow by Blow. I brought this one because it is such a great sounding album. If you have a nice stereo and really want to check the sound quality, play this album. It was produced by George Martin of the Beatles fame.
I didn't know that about
that
album.
So it's a great sounding album.
I focus very often on Jeff Beck's work with Rod Stewart, in which they recorded some of the greatest early 20th century American blues.
Yeah.
On the two albums. I think it was two albums.
Truth is one of the good ones.
Yeah. Truth is such a great album, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you want to get into blues for the first time and you don't want to go the extra mile to find the original versions of these, which are very hard to find, listen to what Rod and Jeff Beck produced.
Well, that's how I got into blues, was listening to rock versions of blues songs,
right.
and then you see who originally did it and go back and listen to that.
We're in the studio with David Roos, a vinyl record aficionado, an expert. I'm just going to say expert. I know you're too humble to accept that, but you really are quite the expert when it comes to a lot of this, you know.
If you say so.
I mean, it's the reason your business did as well as it did for as many years as it did, is that you knew what to handpick and feature in the store and what not to have, I think, on some levels. So
I just went with what I liked, you know.
What you liked.
What I liked.
That's a great way to advise somebody who's getting into it for the first time, I think, when people want to know, what should I know about vinyl record albums? It's the same as wine. It's the same as artwork. You know, go with what you like. Buy something that you like.
And a lot of people buy stuff for the value. You know, they may want a collector's item, but I just went with what I liked and wanted to play it and listen to it.
And there have been some great collector's albums out there over the years, or editions that include not just vinyl record albums, but CDs. And that's what I've been discovering, is I've sort of filled out my vinyl record collection as much as I can, and I'm just looking for newer stuff. And then I read old reviews from the 70s to find older stuff. And that's where I find a lot of R&B and soul. Unfortunately, American press separates music into sort of two categories of popular music, and it feels like it's hip-hop, rap, and country. And what gets left behind and ignored, I think, to a large degree, you can find in British press, which is R&B and soul. And there's so much great new stuff out there by artists that have been around forever that people don't realize. And but the box sets themselves and the special editions, I think, are kind of great. And for a kid, again, we'll go with the kids being this group that are preteens and in their early teenage years that are picking up stuff for the first time. It's a great introduction to have a good box set, especially a reissue of something old. And there's a lot out there, I think, that people don't realize.
There are. And like this one, Sonny Boy Williamson. It was reissued on 180 gram, and I'm not real sure about the 180 gram stuff. It's supposed to sound better, and I know that's why they do it, but I've never really compared.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to make the comparison. 180 gram, by the way, for listeners that don't know, is the weight of the record album itself,
yes.
The vinyl, the platter or the disc, and that's technically a term that's a, you know, sort of thing that you need to know is if you're going to get into vinyl, it's a platter, you know, or a record album. The record album itself is including the cover itself, the vinyl inside, and all the interior printed content. And that interior printed content, I want to look at that Jethro Tull album again before okay. you go, because I might want to buy that from you if it's for sale. I doubt it is.
Actually, that's a personal copy there.
Oh, I'm going to have to find that somewhere. Maybe you can help find me a copy of it, you know. But yeah, again, I think for a lot of people that don't know, LP would be for a long playing album, and that's the standard sort of 12 inches in width and height. And there's an EP, and an EP can be on a 12-inch platter or smaller one, but that's just extended play.
Right.
And extended play is versus 45, which is something that goes 45 revolutions per minute on a turntable, and that would be
a single. One song, a single,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, so although they are releasing some things I've discovered on extended play or LP size records that are played at 45, and that's because the wider the groove.
They are, yeah.
It's exciting, and that's where you can tell the difference when you're listening to things that are issued like that. And I agree with you. The weight of the record doesn't necessarily affect the sound quality. I think, I have no idea, but we'll talk about that when we get back, among other things. And I think that one of the things I'd like to hear about is how you got in the business and what led you to a love of music. And it probably had a lot to do with how you were raised as a kid. Would that be correct?
I'm not really sure.
All right. We'll talk about that when we get back. We'll take a break and be back in the studio with David Bruce.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
We're back with Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny in the studio with vinyl record aficionado and expert David Bruce, although he's too humble to accept the word expert. I think of him as an expert. We were just starting to talk about what led to your love of music, and I was going to ask you about music in your household growing up as a child. Were your parents music fans at all, or just radio listeners? Or
My mother listened to music. She would play Jim Nabors.
Jim Nabors.
Engelbert Humperdinck. So I had a rough go of it.
I guess you did.
She did like Elvis.
Yeah, okay.
So that was probably one of the first artists I enjoyed.
For people that don't know, Jim Nabors is most closely associated with Gomer Pyle. And what they don't know is that he had a go at being a vocalist and a singer. And it's arguable as to whether or not he had a good voice or not. I think very often that falls in the category of camp or sort of satire in a way. And yet he wasn't satirizing anything.
She loved him, though.
Yeah, and he loved the music that he sang. That was the thing that was funny. But it was really kind of hard to see the guy who had that goofy face, who was the goofy Gomer Pyle, open his mouth and out would come this. I think he had sort of aspirations of being an operatic singer in a way.
He can really that's the kind of voice he had, yes.
And Engelbert Humperdinck, for those who don't know, in some ways would have been compared to Elvis at the time, and some people would have accused him of being an Elvis wannabe, and he was not. He was just in a category of a vocalist, you know, separate from that, and was what they would have called a heartthrob. So many women loved Engelbert Humperdinck, were crazy.
This was in the early 70s, in the days of the Sonny and Cher show, and Hee Haw, and just shows where there was always music on.
Right.
I think Johnny Cash had a show.
He did.
In those days.
Yeah.
You could always find music on TV.
Absolutely. Well, and so often those shows like Hee Haw and Laugh-In and Sonny and Cher, were, you could say, the great-grandchildren of vaudeville. You know, vaudeville in New York City was get up, tell a joke, do a song and dance. Some songs and dance were meant to be funny. Some were from the heart and would bring people to their feet with tears.
Right.
But back to a song and dance and a joke, and it just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. And we eventually got the variety show on TV, and then eventually in the 70s, as you said, we had a whole bunch of great TV shows that really were more like vaudeville than the variety shows ever were. And you saw a lot of great talent on those.
Yeah, you did.
And, you know, that's the thing is because it was a song, a joke, another song, a skit, they had to have a lot of talent coming in on a weekly basis. And it was amazing to see who Sonny and Cher would have on, who Hee Haw would have on a weekly basis. People must have just been lined up to get on the show, or they must have been asking people to line up to get them in and out of the recording sessions. But some of those are still great to watch to this day.
Yes, yeah, they're fun.
And what was great about that show was the fact that you had the Bakersfield sound brought in with traditional country music. And
Buck Owens.
Buck Owens, yeah. One of the greatest purveyors of the Bakersfield sound. And for people that don't know, that would be Bakersfield, California, which had its own unique blend of what was sort of a bluegrass sound that came originally from the Southeast, but somehow wound up in Bakersfield. And I don't know the path it took to get there.
I don't either.
But Buck Owens brought it back to the Southeast on Hee Haw, and it was great to hear. You know, that's the old I'm a pickin' and I'm a grinning thing that was like vaudeville.
But in those days, you know, everybody seemed to have their own style, and they were all great, you know.
Just, their own style, that's a very good
point.
And
you don't hear that anymore.
No, you don't. No, there's not a distinction in style for the most part. You have to really dig deep. You have to dig deep. But among popular music, I think that's the thing. Even in popular music, there were so many different styles, and now all the style sort of blends together, and if it sounds like something that came out a month ago, it's going to get on the airwaves. And
yep.
Are we starting to sound like old guys? I know I'm 59, and I don't want to sound like that, but I do look for a lot of
I think
of
we are old guys.
We are. I look for new music all the time. As I said, I read British press to keep me abreast of really great music, especially R&B and soul, which I still love, and it's hard to find a news source for that here, you know. When you think that Mavis Staples came out with an album about a year ago, and that she was a part of a group that was born out of gospel music, really, but was great soul and R&B, the Staples Singers, including her pop.
Yeah, I love the Staples Singers, yeah.
Right? Amazing. And that voice.
And even Pop Staples put out some good blues albums
sure
on
did.
His own.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you carry some of that when you had Compact Discovery?
If it was used, you know, and came through the door, sure, I carried it. But new, it's I mainly just carried what was popular, brand new.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you had and still have a lot of CDs. You still have a lot of CDs that were in the store. Is that correct? That you wound up selling the inventory, but you still have, you're sitting on a good collection of CDs.
I've got a few, yeah. Maybe 100.
Okay. Oh, just 100. Okay, I don't know why.
I mean, a personal collection, I have 1,000 or
Now we're getting there. Maybe you should just have an exhibit sometime of everything in your personal collection and just see what people's reaction is to it. I bet it's pretty diverse. You have a lot of 45 singles?
Never dealt with 45s.
Never dealt with those. No. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Tougher to keep track of, especially in their size, right?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, that's true. But you probably have some great box sets. Were you a collector of box sets yourself personally?
I've got a few, but nothing, no album box sets, I don't think.
Yeah.
Some CD box sets like B.B. King, you know.
Yeah.
Got to have everything he put out. Stevie Ray Vaughan had a good box set.
Yes.
Jimi Hendrix, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hearing again where you're leaning toward the great blues, the modern blues players and musicians who blended jazz in a little bit, but mostly blues, and that's a great thing to realize is that all popular music has its roots in early 20th century blues. For the most part, you can trace it back one step at a time and see who they mimicked 10 years before or 20 years before.
I think that's what new music is missing out on is the blues.
It's not heard anymore. You could hear it up to at some point in the 70s, I think. You could hear those roots in there, and it is missing. Certainly in the United States. Again, if you look at what's being released in the United States that press doesn't look at, then you are hearing and finding some of that. It's just tough to find, you know. In the studio here, Local Matters is listening to and talking with David Bruce, who's a record aficionado, vinyl record aficionado. And so one of the terms we talked about before the show that I'd like to talk about again here is the gatefold experience. And we just looked at a Jethro Tull album that has that great gatefold, including a newspaper, which I didn't realize. But gatefolds very often had you know, extra photographs and lyrics. What are some of the better Gatefold albums you can think of?
Well, that Jethro Tull is definitely one.
I remember one of my earliest Gatefold albums, and Gatefold albums very often have two vinyl record albums in them, so they're a double album.
Not much going on with Yes Fragile there on the Gatefold.
But at least the lyrics are there, right?
The lyrics are there.
If you want to read the lyrics, you know. But I know that I had one of my early record albums I bought that I was really happy with, and they were a new group at the time, was called Heart. You know, and Heart came out with this album called Dreamboat Annie. Oh, my gosh. Let's pause that and look at Coltrane here. This is Coltrane live at the Village Vanguard. And that sort of has a bio sheet. What are we looking at there in the way of the words?
Yeah, Nat Hentoff, one of the jazz critics of the time, he has a big write-up on the gatefold on the inside, along with a picture of Coltrane.
And that's something you miss with digital music and even CDs. You know, the space for that is not there. And there it is all spread out. And he's a jazz critic, but he enthusiastically gave him a thumbs-up review in that, right?
Oh, yes.
We're going to look at something else here that he's
Pink Floyd
up.
Metal, that's a gatefold.
So this predates Pink Floyd's really popular music, but that's a great gatefold. I've never seen that, actually. I think the reissues of that have that as a non-gatefold, one single sleeve that I can think of.
To me, this is their best album.
What's the name of the album again for listeners?
Metal. Pink Floyd Metal.
But it's M-E-D-D-L-E, right?
Yes.
As in
meddling. It's two albums before Dark Side of the Moon.
Two albums before Dark Side of the Moon. And a lot of people don't realize that Pink Floyd included a guy named Syd Barrett. Is Syd Barrett on this album?
No, he was just only on their first one.
He was only on the first album. I didn't realize
that. And
then
he sort of went off the deep end.
He did go off the deep end.
Wouldn't show up for shows.
Right, yeah.
So they replaced him with David Gilmour.
And they're homages to him, I think. I think they had a lot of heartbreak, and the difficulties with working with Syd Barrett was just too much of a genius, I think. One of those insane geniuses that he couldn't harness his energy in the right way. But they very respectfully made some songs about him along the way, which I think is great.
Yes, Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
Shine On You Crazy Diamond. Yeah, absolutely. I think there were a lot of songs that they didn't specifically refer to him, but were a view of what happened along the way that people don't know about necessarily. Yeah. But now let's see. In Compact Discovery, you sold books or no books?
No books.
Okay.
CDs, movies, and records.
And movies, I see.
Yes,
so
yes.
DVDs.
Right.
Yeah, of movies. Yeah, and there are a lot of great box sets on DVDs as well, and extra stuff when you get the special editions that are kind of fun. A lot of that started happening really in the late 80s, early 90s, would that be right, with the DVDs and CD box sets? Or did it come a little after that?
Not sure.
Yeah.
Well, Compact Discovery didn't actually open until 96.
You opened in 96?
Yes, wow. And I actually just worked there. I didn't buy the store until 2008.
And it was located where originally?
Beside Rite Aid in the old Willow Tree Shopping Center.
In the old Willow Tree Shopping Center? I can't picture it there at all. But, yeah, that's so it's moved around for listeners that are not from the area. It's moved around town quite a few times, I guess, and found its home in some ideal locations, I think. And along the way, after the malls in America started to fade, and ours did as well, it went in there and occupied that space, which was kind of cool to go in this, you know, former mall and find you there as this sort of outpost, if you will, oasis in the desert.
It was great being in the mall.
Yeah.
It's a shame that didn't last.
I think that's why I remember going first, you know, so it was seeing you there. By then you owned it yourself, right?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you started there as just a sales clerk or clerk in the store? Or?
Yeah, actually, Compact Discovery started in Nashville, and I used to go shop there, and I asked those guys about opening a franchise here, and they told me it was already happening here.
Oh, I see.
So I just happened to run into the owner.
You just jumped on board.
And he said, yeah, come to work for me.
I have so much I want to ask you and so much I want to talk about, so I'm just going to say that this is part one of two with David Bruce. You would come back and talk some more about all this,
sure.
Right? Yeah, I'd love for listeners to know more about vinyl records and their future, because I think there's a very different future for them now. And as we were talking about earlier, the fact that cassettes are being reissued now, and it kind of started, I heard, via a DJ who snatched up a couple of Beastie Boys albums and did remixes of those, and those are cassette only. And I think that reflects a trend in how music is sold, because it's difficult to pirate either a vinyl record album or a cassette. Although we did our own version when we were teenagers, right?
Yes, we did.
Your vinyl
onto
cassette. So.
I loved making mixed CDs cassettes. Yeah.
Well, David Bruce, thank you so much for being in the studio, and we look forward to hearing you again on another session here at Local Matters.
Thanks for having me.